This is the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. Several Latin American presidents are making South-South ties a main focus of their foreign policy. Today on the AQ Podcast, we'll try to understand what that means in practice for business, trade, and diplomacy.
This approach of visiting Africa and trying to explicitly make these connections is a relatively new political movement. These are things that presidents are used to doing more with strong commercial partners in Asia or, you know, visits to Europe, to North America, and so on.
If there's a buzzword driving foreign policy these days in Latin America and elsewhere, it's probably the Global South. The idea that countries in the developing world are linked by shared history and geopolitical interests and should therefore strengthen ties among each other through trade, government projects, and cultural exchanges. This idea of building South-South ties has become a top priority for some leaders, including Colombia's Gustavo Petro, Brazil's Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, Bolivia's Luis Arce, as well as the dictatorships of Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua. Some of this is about politics, but a lot of this is about trade. This is where a lot of the growth is today. The share of South-South trade in global commerce has continuously increased over the last two decades, from around 17% in 2005 to 28% in 2021. Today on the podcast, we want to take a look at where Latin America's ties stand with the rest of the Global South, which governments are making this a priority, and what does it mean for the Global North, i.e. Europe and the United States. These are big topics, so to make things just a bit easier, we've decided to leave China out of today's discussion. This is not a conspiracy. It's just that we've covered China-Latin America relations quite a lot at America's Quarterly, including on this podcast. And today we want to use our time to talk about Latin America's relationships with Africa, the Middle East, as well as the rest of Asia, which don't get as much attention. Our guest is Andrea Ordóñez, a senior research fellow at Southern Voice, a network of think tanks from Latin America, Asia, and Africa. She wrote a great piece for America's Quarterly last year. Andrea, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brian, for having me here today.
So, Andrea, let's get into it right away here. What is the general state of Latin America's South-South ties today? Beyond the rhetoric, what's the concrete reality?
Well, I have to say that it's slow, and I will first start by unpacking how we can understand these South-South links and cooperation. So I think there's at least three levels that we have to consider. We have to consider the broad political economic cooperation, which we can see at the presidential level, at like the trade agreement level. The second one is more project-based cooperation, which is around specific activities, practical things that countries do together. And then there is the non-state cooperation, which I think is also relevant. So cooperation across universities, across research centers, cultural centers, and so on. So I think that if we take a broad view considering all those three types of corporations, we can see that we really are behind. In general, for most of the countries in the Global South, so in Latin America, Africa, Asia, our main partners with whom we seek cooperation are in the Global North.
So what are the concrete goals here? What do you envision when you think of furthering a Global South-South cooperation agenda?
Politically speaking, we need better regional blocks. And then more in the political project-based cooperation, I think there we just need to be more open to learning from things that are happening in other regions of the world, instead of just relying on what the global north is doing in a given problem or so on, right? So being able to learn from what an African country is doing or what an Asian country is doing. And then in the non-state part, I think that has to do a lot with, you know, the government can enable these by making it easier to travel for cultural things, for work things. You know how impossible it is to travel across the global south. I mean, it's a nightmare. If you think it's a nightmare for, you know, a person from Latin America, Africa, or Asia to go to Europe, try for an African to come to Latin America. It's almost impossible. There are no consulates of Latin America in many cities of Africa. They won't accept your passport by mail. You have to go in person. Who can do that just for a work trip, right? And so you end up not having these opportunities to really meet, to really work together if you can't even visit each other.
So Andrea, looking at those three areas that you mentioned, trade, projects, and then non-state activities, which of those three, broadly speaking, again, is the most advanced?
Well, they're very interrelated. So I think countries that have stronger political economic ties will be more likely to have projects that are consistently happening, right? But I would say that there's quite a bit of growth in terms of these specific projects that happen on a one-to-one basis between countries. And the problem is that when these ones happen in isolation, they're one of, many times they're one of encounters, right? And they don't build up into being a larger scale and more systematic cooperation that we would like to see.
So I promised our audience we'd be as concrete as possible. When you talk about these projects, can you give us an example?
Yeah, so actually Peru and Thailand have been working together for over 15 years in sharing experiences around community tourism. So they've been exchanging policies and approaches to these. Also, for example, Colombia, Cambodia, and Japan have been sharing experiences about how to dismantle mines in the process of peace for Colombia. But as you can imagine, this does not necessarily translate into a larger agreement at the political level between these countries.
So I want to go region by region in a moment and talk about specifics. But before we do, I want to ask you, I suppose, a political question. This is a politics-focused podcast. Which presidents in Latin America seem to be most focused on building out these ties with the global South?
I would say that we have two presidents to focus on. And first is President Lula from Brazil. And then we have President Petro from Colombia. So first, in the case of President Lula, he has had a very clear agenda. For example, he has been in the summit of the heads of state for the Caribbean community just recently. He also was just part of the African Union summit. And when we see now as Brazil being the host for the G20 this year, their whole agenda is very focused on highlighting what are the priorities for the global South.
I have heard criticism, though, from people in Brasilia, including people who would like to see Brazil more engaged with the global South, who say that a lot of that has just been rhetoric and conferences, and there hasn't been much action from Lula on that front. Do you agree with that?
I do understand where the criticisms come from, and I would join them in saying that it's definitely not enough. And when one sees, for example, the list of guests, guest presidents that will come to the G20, so presidents from outside the G20 cohort, you would expect more Global South representation there as well. But he's building on previous experiences from Brazil as a country. They've been doing South-South cooperation in terms of projects and concrete aspects of cooperation, particularly with Africa, for many years, right? So, for example, in topics around agriculture, there has been significant work together.
You mentioned Gustavo Petro of Colombia. Tell me about him.
So in the case of President Petro, he's relying heavily on his vice president, Vice President Marquez, who has stated from the beginning an aim to connect with Africa. And she did a tour last year visiting some African countries to strengthen these ties. And it's hard to say from just one round of visits, how much can this translate into concrete cooperation, but it's a first step and it's much more ambitious than we've seen other countries take.
How so?
This approach of visiting Africa and trying to explicitly make these connections is a relatively new political movement. These are things that presidents are used to doing more with strong commercial partners in Asia or, visits to Europe, to North America, and so on.
Why do these leaders, in your view, tend to think that this is important? Why this focus from Lula and Petro specifically on building out South-South ties? Is this about the non-alignment agenda at the end of the day? Is this about the search for alternatives beyond the United States and Europe and to some extent China and trying to build a more diverse portfolio of international partners? Or is this about something entirely different?
So I think there it depends on which case we're talking about, right? So I think Brazil is in a unique position in this context because it's the biggest Latin American country, also part of BRICS, and also part of the G20. So I think it's part of their agenda to strengthen their sphere of soft power, to put it some way, in a context of growing multipolar world.
To what extent is it overtly about skepticism of the United States? Which in the case of Colombia in particular, that's been Washington's main partner in the region for decades.
I think that it would be not wise from the governments or from commentators to see South-South cooperation from that point of view. I think that it's another alternative and it's another way of cooperating. So, for example, when one thinks about how Africa is approaching its dilemma of cooperation, it's easy to see that it's not a one-or debate, right? So they're very keen on strengthening their cooperation with Europe, with the US, but also with the other regions.
You mentioned Petro and Lula, but that's only a portion of the region. And I want to go through some of these other leaders right now, starting with some on the left. Where do you see Mexico under President López Obrador and Chile with President Gabriel Boric? Are they not as engaged on the South-South front as these two other countries?
In my experience, they haven't been. And it also relates to their position to the countries as themselves, not only them are as presidents, right? So besides the ones that we've been talking about, then we have high South-South cooperation from Cuba and from some medium from Argentina, probably from Jamaica, and that's it. Nobody else has really put these front and center in their agenda.
And countries like Argentina now under Javier Milei pursuing a completely different agenda of alignment with the United States and Israel and so on.
Yeah, that will totally take us into different directions moving forward.
We'll be back with more after a short break. The America Society's art gallery at 680 Park Avenue in New York is a truly amazing venue for art from Latin America and the Caribbean. Right now, the gallery is showing the second part of the exhibition, El Dorado Myths of Gold, which presents artworks from the pre-colonial period to today and uses the myth of the so-called Golden City as a framework for understanding the Americas. El Dorado Myths of Gold will be on view until May 18th, 2024. Let's go region by region now, as I promised. And I want to start with India. Latin America, Latin American countries have a meaningful relationship with India. Investment from India in the region in 2022 was somewhere between $12 and $16 billion. That's a decent amount of money. It is a fraction, though, of the $160 billion in investment that came from China. Proportionally with trade, the difference is about the same. But India has been focused on areas like pharmaceuticals, automobiles, and manufacturing. Can you talk to me a little bit about India's ties with the region sitting here today?
In the case of India, I think for the most part, Latin America and the Caribbean remains a secondary partner. And why I say that is because last year, India had the G20 presidency, and they were the ones who promoted the African Union to be part of the G20 this year onwards. So we see, of course, in their agenda, one of the key issues is to strengthen their ties with Africa more so than with Latin America. If India or other southern country or region would want to develop further their cooperation with the region, who would they talk to, right? I mean, the EU tried last year through CELAC to have the EU-CELAC dialogues, but they had very little traction at the end, right? And this is one of the difficulties of talking about the regional cooperation is what are we talking about? Because we don't have a body that the region can rely on at all times for cooperation.
Let's talk about Asia beyond India. And of course, we're leaving China out of this discussion, as I mentioned during the introduction. Where else looking around the region, I mean, from Turkey to Vietnam and elsewhere, are there any particular countries that have seemed particularly interested in increasing their engagement with Latin America and vice versa?
Well, I think that an important actor is and will probably continue to be South Korea. In terms of technology, in terms of their involvement in different countries with the auto industry. So I think that's another opportunity for the region. And they're also very keen on developing further the concept of South-South cooperation.
Let's shift to Africa. This is an area where some of those ties that you're talking about go back further. You mentioned Brazil. And some of those ties, especially with Portuguese-speaking countries like Angola and Mozambique, go back, well, they go back a long time, but really go back 50 years or so to when the last dictatorship began to make this a priority. Where do you see the true potential there?
Well, I think that Latin America and Africa have a lot of opportunities to collaborate. And opportunities, not that it is happening yet. Part of the difficulty, I think, is in Latin America's unwillingness to see Africa as a true partner, right? We've been used to seeing Africa as a continent that is way behind us in some way, to put it bluntly. But that is really not the case. Africa is growing very rapidly. It's very young. It's attracting a lot of investment and interest globally. They do have an African Union that it has many difficulties, but they have an African Union that has worked, that works independently of the political parties of the running presidents, and that focuses on positioning Africa globally. If Latin America as a bloc wants to have a voice, we need to find this one organization that's going to do it. And bet on it in the medium and long term.
There's no shortage of blocks, though. I mean, we have CELAC, we have the OAS, other cooperation bodies as well.
But none of those bodies have gained the constant and systematic support to represent the region globally.
Beyond these diplomatic bodies, staying on Africa just for a moment, I mean, where is there specific economic, trade integration, infrastructure potential? I mean, where do you see the biggest opportunities there?
The countries that are growing very fast in terms of the relevance and importance in the African continent are, for example, Kenya, Ethiopia, Nigeria. These are very diverse and big countries. And it would be a matter of starting to develop those relationships. I mean, in the visits that Vice President Marquez did last year, these are some of the stops she did. And I think they were probably the right ones, no? In addition to South Africa, of course.
Moving to the Middle East, we've seen a lot of interest from investors. There was a recent delegation from the United Arab Emirates that made a very widely publicized visit to Brazil, announced some investments. Saudi Arabia was invited to join the BRICS in August 2023. I think that body is becoming even more oriented toward the global south under the influence of China. As a result of that expansion, how are those relationships evolving right now between the Middle East and Latin American countries?
Just broadly speaking, I think that one of the things with the Middle East, some of the Middle Eastern countries that you've mentioned, particularly like the Gulf states, is that they have been trying to find, again, that position in the global space with the latest presidencies in the COP, in the G20 for Saudi Arabia and so on. But they have, I think, as they are struggling with finding the right narrative for what their approach globally is. So it's hard to tell what is the type of cooperation that they are really aiming for and, you know, how to engage with them.
Let me ask you now about Latin America itself. South-South ties also means ties among Latin American countries. And this is an area where at America's Quarterly, we've published several articles about this over the years. This is an area where the region lags. In Latin America, less than a fifth of trade is intra-regional trade. That is, it happens within the region itself. Is that changing at all? What do you see and hear?
Well, I have the feeling that it's changing because we are also starting to see our problems more interconnected. So now when we, for example, the last couple of years, the discussion around migration and the crisis of refugees from Venezuela came across many countries, right? So it was kind of like this wake-up call to there should be some regional responses to some of these. In the same way that migration to the US and what that entails for the whole Central American countries also raises, you know, this opportunity to think about it in a more regional sense. The same with security and the issues around drug cartels and so on. What makes it difficult is that many of the countries don't have these bodies that maintain cooperation independently of the political parties and independently of what's happening that day at the highest level of politics.
You're talking about polarization, and you know, you look at this left-right gap that we have within countries and then also among countries. You know, unfortunately, the trust amongst these leaders often ends up being low, and there are specific examples of this. We had in Mercosur, we had two presidents in Jair Bolsonaro and Alberto Fernandez who, for most of their time that they coincided, refused to speak to each other. And now we have kind of similar dynamics among, you can take the same two countries. The relationship between Javier Milei and Lula is, I think, a little more civilized, a little more fluid, but it would be too much to say that there's the kind of trust there that would allow for greater integration to take place.
Yeah, and you need to be able to, even in those cases, let's say if we had structures of cooperation that were more systematic and more established, maybe for a couple of years you don't have that political cooperation that you would imagine at a presidential level, but you still have the links, the connections at the ministerial level, the ambassadors, you know, that other track of diplomacy would still be alive, and then you can, you know, build upon it later again, right? But in our continent, we tend to dismantle things pretty easily, which is part of the difficulty of working in these international cooperation, because we need some continuity and we need to be able to work on the long term.
Final question for you here. You know, the America's Quarterly podcast has a lot of listeners all over the world. We're very proud to have a large number of listeners within Latin America itself. We also have quite a lot of listeners in places like Washington, Madrid, London, Brussels. What advice would you have to people and specifically members of governments in the global north about this trend? Because I know that this sort of thing, as we mentioned at the beginning, the traditional trading partners and diplomatic partners of Latin American countries have been the United States and Western Europe. And this talk of the South can cause some heartburn among diplomats in places like the State Department and in the European Union. If you were in their shoes, how would you be reacting to all of this?
Well, first, I think it's important to see international cooperation as a set of constellations, right? It's never going to be totally static, and the way of configuring them for different purpose will be different. So countries will come together for one thing. They may not be on the same page for another one. So I would say that, you know, governments in the global north should not be reluctant to seeing South-South cooperation as a positive thing. I think it's also important to remember that part of the challenge that Latin America has faced internationally is because the region was left a little bit on the void when it stopped receiving development cooperation from the global north explicitly, because we reached the middle income level. But that just kind of like took away a lot of the ties also with the global north. So in reality, I think it's not unfair to say that Latin America has lost its relevance also for states in Europe and in North America. So I think it's only fair that the region starts looking everywhere else for partners.
On that note, Andrea, thank you so much for joining us on the AQ podcast.
Thank you, Brian. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by Luisa Franco and edited in partnership with Human Group Media.